simplicity is a high score on simplicity, but I found the document to be so simple to the point of being useless as a technical strategy. It seemed to be more inclined towards a success in marketing than actually a policy success. In terms of resource base able to deliver, this is how much we've got and whether it can actually happen or not. It's almost impossible to assess because there's no real discussion of numbers at all in the document. In terms of appropriate incentives, there are in fact appropriate incentives for in terms of fossil fuels, but that's in a separate policy document called the Petroleum Action Plan. There are incentives including seismic studies and so on. So the incentives in terms of fossil fuels seem to be quite strong. But on the other hand, there are very vague statements concerning renewables, such as remove unnecessary regulatory barriers, encourage investment in renewable resources, and an even weaker statement, consider what role the government should play to encourage biomass development. So we're not only not wanting to do it, we're only considering what role we should do. There isn't a single commitment to renewable energy resources except for the Marine Energy Development Fund, and that's only 1 year, or possibly four months if you take it to the beginning of 2011. In terms of adequacy, the strategy appears adequate for incentivising fossil fuel exploration, but completely inadequate for a transition to sustainability. The section on environmental practice is the worst, with the government opting for best practice without anywhere defining what best practice actually is. In terms of stability, if you want a policy to be of long-term benefit, then it has to be stable over time, as countries such as Germany have shown. The present strategy is a distinct shift from the previous policy, with exception of the aspirational 90% target. In terms of contextual frameworks, that is, what exists hangs around the policy, the contextual frameworks are mixed. The fact that the emission trading scheme is to be implemented by the Ministry of Economics instead of the Ministry of Environment is a clear travesty and shows that economic growth is going to take priority over the environment. And changing the RMA to fast-track development will in all likelihood slow environmental protection. In summary, I found the new government strategy clearly a step backwards, a return to business as usual growth and development. The strategy will not only act in the long-term detriment of the peoples of New Zealand, but will also send a message internationally to developing countries in particular that fossil fuel exploitation is the expedient thing to do. This will be read by China as we can develop our coal industries and use as much coal as we want because developed countries are doing exactly the same. The new a new strategy, if it's going to be revised, needs to give substantive goals with measurable indicators. The revised document needs to put out real numbers against each energy source that could be developed and give a real strategy to actually attain those numbers over a given time frame. The document must also work off the trade-offs between economic growth and sustainability and propose a strategy to deal with this problem, just not mention it as the present document does and ignore it and hope that it goes away. The strategy also needs to take account of international efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and the transition to renewable energy resources. The strategy also needs to be more proactive in promoting New Zealand attempts to achieve the transition, not only marine energy, but wind energy and biomass and the other alternative sources. Strategy also needs to detail the environmental implications of the offshore oil and gas program and document the safeguards that will need to be put in place to protect the New Zealand marine environment so that we don't get disasters like just happened in the Gulf of Mexico. In short, I found that the document needs to be written by energy and environmental professionals rather than policymakers and marketeers. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that, Bob. Right, everyone, I'm just going to unmute all of you, and I'm going to open the floor up for questions. So, feel free to just directly address the person whom you'd like to get a response from.
Kent Atkinson at NZBA here. I'd be interested to hear from Mr. Davin whether he thinks there is a scenario in which it would be possible to keep Huntly operating at all and still meet the target of 90% of the nation's electricity be generated renewably by 2025?
No, we don't think there is. One of the scenarios developed by the Electricity Commission is called South Island Wind, and that involves decommissioning half of Huntly, but also requires the decommissioning of two major gas combined cycle gas turbines.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you do ask the question, how can the government orchestrate that through the current wholesale electricity market? And, so to that extent, we sort of think that having a target is inconsistent with the wholesale electricity market mechanism. You should have one or the other, really.
Thank you.
Right. Anybody got any questions?
Well, if nobody else is asking, there's mention in the presentations of potential for wind, rain, the existing capacity for gas and coal and other thermal sources. I'm wondering to what extent either of the speakers expects electricity generated from marine sources, waves or tidal currents to play any significant role in New Zealand by 2025.
Very difficult to say.
First, if you like, Bob.
Yeah, okay, Tim.
We think, as I mentioned before, in New Zealand, wave energy looks a better prospect than tidal. But by 2025, we think they've got a very small potential. Just give us a moment. I'll just have a look at our early report. We've covered it. Look, I haven't got a figure here, but the total energy mix by 2025 is expected to be quite small.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with Tim. Wave energy is essentially wind energy, and so you've got the same problems with the variability of wave energy as you have with wind energy. You can buy wind energy off the shelf right at this moment. The sorts of curve to bring wave energy up to wind energy is likely to be 15 to 20 years, and so it's unlikely to be operational by 2025, only 15 years away. And wind is there at the moment.
Could I just ask Mr. Davin to expand a little bit on a point that he made early in his presentation, the issue of the immediate problem that New Zealand faces up to 2014 in relation to the Cook Strait cable, in terms of having a reliable electricity supply?
A lot of our generation is in the South Island, New Zealand's generation, and the high voltage direct current link is a significant constraint at the moment to transferring that electricity to the main demand centres, which are clearly in the North Island. As I say, that the Transpower are working very actively now to remove that constraint, but it won't be completed until 2014.
And after that, we'll need peaking plants to fill in the gaps when the wind power is not running at capacity.
Yeah, particularly in a dry year.
Wondering whether...
As I said, in a dry year, sometimes the wind actually stops.
Mm-hmm. We're now going into a La Nina spring with high potential for a La Nina weather pattern over summer. Previous La Nina weather patterns have been associated with a big drop in precipitation in the southern Alps. Is that the kind of scenario that you would look at as a risk for terms of energy generation in the Southern Lakes?
I take your word for it in terms of the weather patterns. I'm not aware of that, but yes, if next year's a dry year, it could be a problem year.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Do we have any other questions?
It's Jez Weston here. I have a couple of questions. One for Tim, which would be, you didn't mention geothermal in your comments on renewable electricity. How much of a significant factor do you think that will be, and how fast do you think geothermal can grow in New Zealand?
In our earlier work, we had assumed, in trying to work out what was likely by 2025, we had a mix of geothermal and wind and some hydro. As you're aware, there's a number of geothermal plants under construction and a number of consented. And so that's going to be a significant contribution to our generation mix over the next 10 years. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it's an important part of the mix.
Right, so it's an important part of the mix. Okay.
Yes.
And the other question I had is that let's presume that battery electric vehicles actually are commercially successful. Is there anything in this energy strategy that prepares our electricity generation for the increased demands there?
Maybe I can answer this one. I had a student who researched this question and found that New Zealand could replace its entire electric vehicle fleet with light vehicle fleet with electric vehicles without any increase in capacity, because you can charge them at night. So in terms of capacity, there's not a problem.
Yep.
In terms of lake storage, there will be a problem, but you're probably only talking about 10% of the supply.
Okay.
So if you're looking at removing imported fuels, then cutting out Comalco or cutting out our export of energy as aluminium would solve the problem. But you're right, there's nothing in the strategy which actually addresses these problems or looks seriously at electric vehicles.
Right.
In fact, as was pointed out, that the eco strategy thinks we're moving too fast away from petrol cars. Presumably that's because of all the oil that New Zealand finds will need a market, and so cutting out cars will be a problem for them.
The assumptions that have been made around electric vehicles in the scenarios developed by the Electricity Commission are that by 2025 they'll make up about 5% of the fleet, and that results in additional demand of 0.7%. I think Bob, you mentioned the fact that they can draw off, they can be a storage facility for helping offset peaks.
Yeah.
But the overall increase in demand is relatively modest. I think most people think that 5% of the fleet in 15 years' time would be quite significant. I think it's about 200,000 vehicles.
I guess what the comment I'd make is that whether it's 5% or 10% or 100% depends upon government policies. If the government policy doesn't indicate anything, any move in that direction, then of course it's not going to happen. If you rely upon natural growth of people wanting electric vehicles, then it's unlikely to occur. In the same way as the 90% renewable target is unlikely to occur, as IPENS correctly points out, unless there is major policy change to make it happen. And the present policy document doesn't give any guidance in this direction at all. In fact, it goes in the opposite direction, goes away from renewables.
Is there any consideration, or has any consideration been given by either of the speakers to the prospect of an expanded geothermal program in New Zealand, and what the possibilities for that are, including more modern forms than we currently have, such as tapping heat in the earth in a way that doesn't deplete the water the hot water reservoirs underneath the earth.
You want to comment, Tim, or will I say something?
I think geothermal, New Zealand engineering profession has some pretty good expertise in this whole area. In fact, that's been exported to a number of countries, that expertise. And, of course, I think the general view, there's some still unknown resources in New Zealand. Geothermal plants have a high utilisation factor, so they're very worthwhile. So we think there will be more development. In terms of additional similar technology, it's basically called hot rocks, I think you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There might well be some scope for that, and we think that's one of the areas this government should investigate to expand and develop our expertise and technology in hot rocks.
Thank you.
I agree entirely, but one of the problems with the policy is that it doesn't, I don't think it even mentions geothermal, does it? I can't remember. I don't think it mentions it at all. The previous policy did mention geothermal and suggested that geothermal was more economic than wind or gas or any other source, and so put a high priority to geothermal. But the present present policy, I don't think, mentions it at all, which is extraordinary.
Thank you.
Wonderful. All right, I think I'm going to wrap it up in that case. I'm going to point out, Jez, I believe the Royal Society's submission is going in soon, yes?
It will be, indeed. It will be along tomorrow.
Wonderful. Great. So that should be interesting to have a look at. And mm-hmm. just a reminder to everyone that the audio for this will go up on the website shortly, and these slides are available in our resource library for registered journalists. Of course, if you aren't, do feel free to give me a shout. I'm sure we can get the slides to you as well. Brilliant. So thank you very much to our two speakers for spending their time with us and helping us to better understand this document and its context. And thanks to everyone as well for signing in and for giving us a listen. And the website, again, is www.sciencemediacentre.co.nz. Bye-bye.